transport, that's a problem in Cape Town. Also, boiling water is a bit of a shortage here in Parliament. So, thank you very much for the boiling water coming here. All right, let's continue with our hearing. We're still busy with responses from the South African Police Service Management. And over to the story. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. From the explanations which were given by General Rabi, I just also wanted to add a request to the committee. I think when I explained the four indicator category, I think I was also open to the committee to say our focus now is more on the outcome because we were more limited to the output. And the output does not necessarily help us to reach out to the client much. I think with the overall indicators, we, out of all that we're measuring, we are not exactly sure what the client wants. Like, for instance, it has been explained by the honorable member. If we reflect on the percentages, crime has gone down with this or we've done this, the next question is it what the community want to hear? And when we also plan this, I'm sure there's a type of reporting that we do. Maybe firstly, if we report to cabinet or we report to the portfolio committee, it's different when you tell it to the community because you have lifted your reporting higher when it comes to this level. If I'm speaking about a percentage, the honorable understand what I'm talking about, but the community doesn't. So my proposal and my request would be maybe the indicators need a continuous discussion and also guidance from our side. What is the experience of the honorable members with the public? So that then we can change them and adapt them, continuously change and adapt them to what the client wants. But what we've done from the side of the police, we've advanced the service charter and we start now discussing the service promise with the community. And the community will relate exactly what their expectations are. And when we have also performed, we'll also go back to them and give them feedback that is through the community policing strategy. That's how we're going to learn how to shape maybe the indicators. So that is the exercise that is in place. And then, honorable members and chair, the next question was relating to a feedback on discussion with the Treasury by DPCI, and I'll give it to General Matarete.
Thank you, Jeff. This question has been coming to us all the time, and in one session I had indicated the Secretariat has to be the one that leads this issue, and also whether there was a handing over between the two ministers and this one specifically. But be that as it may, I had raised this with the secretary, and I indicated he has to start initiating this discussion. But we would be part in giving input about DPCI. So what he has done, he has already written a letter to me officially so that we need to give him input by the 9th of May, so that there can be those discussions taken forward with Treasury. So there is work that has started already.
Thank you, General Matakata. General Sitole.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Then the next question is on the status of approved structure, the SANEP and the DPCI. Will also relate to it.
Thanks, General. This is part of the whole DPCI structure. Because the two unit structure are part of the DPCI structure, so that is depending now on what would be the outcome of the discussions tomorrow. So we will know exactly if that is finalized, that we then get the structures or the posts advertised, because we need the people who are still working on these two units with the temporary capacities that we had decided on.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Just the next question although General Rabi related on the indicator changes, but it was just talking to the property crimes and the crimes of fear. What I just wanted to add here is that yesterday, when we also related to the committee, I indicated that this particular exercise needs to start with the shifting of budget and resources to those crimes, to fighting those crimes that are creating a problem. And before we then lift up the indicator, we must have resource, that is, the redirected resource on those particular crimes. So one of the exercises that we will then be conducting as we're going back, we will be looking at all those particular crimes and declare them a priority and look at the review of the and redirection of those particular resources. Then we can consider the review of the target. But a mistake that I wouldn't like us to make is going back and lifting up the indicator. We will come back not performing. So we will work on that particular exercise so that we make sure that all the crimes of fear, we take them down, and then the community will then feel comfortable. Then, Honorable Chair, the reduction of forensic targets. I would like General Magadela to maybe take the first bite on it.
Thank you very much.
General, can I reiterate a reduction of?
The forensic targets.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
General, I think I'll stick to what we have said as well. What I found in the instant assessment I conducted while I arrived the target vis-a-vis performance, as well as the allocation of resources to CRC, I think I've raised this with you. There is no balance between the two. Hence, it makes me in a very skeptical way to reduce the targets. I would urge that we should actually maintain the targets while we're still fighting the question of resource allocation to the unit. We must be mindful of the fact that that is a specialized field where we have scientists that we need to actually allocate to the unit. Also establish a brain drainage that we were actually the actual purifying field, that is subs, for all these students who are coming from the universities, and then they find that when they find that they've gained much experience, they decided to train out to look for better fields. While on the other side, we have a strategy how to retain them in terms of the skills allowance. We find that that is not forthcoming. Hence, the target's influence is actually having a bad effect on the performance in general. I'm not sure whether my response is suffice to the members.
You know, Honourable Kalabana, follow up.
What I was asking was, number one, why did you drop the target? And now you're saying maybe you should retain the target. I think that's a conversation you should have had before you produced your documents. But the question went on to say, is there an established link between forensic evidence and the court cases? Remember, I asked a long, involved question saying, I'm phoned by hysterical prosecutors saying they've got no evidence, they're going to let all these people free tomorrow because nothing's coming from the lab. Now, surely the laboratory is told you must have your evidence in by X day or they're going to let these potential convicted people, the detainees, go. And that doesn't seem to exist. Or something's gone very wrong between yourselves and the courts. So that was the actual question on top of why have you dropped the targets, which you now seem to think is not necessary.
Thank you. Thank you, General Sitole and the team.
Thanks, sir. We will first allow General Rabi to add to the targets before General Makadlela responds. Thank you.
One would say thank you. What we've done as far as the APP targets are concerned within the the forensics environment, in the previous versions of the APP, the targets that relates to or the evidence portion of the the targets that related to the forensic environment was expressed relative to working days. So a certain percent, like 75% of the exhibits to be processed within 25 working days. But in the past financial year, we experienced difficulties in applying the methodology because of the fact that people were, in some instances, they were working over weekends, etc. So it was becoming increasingly difficult to measure exactly relative to working days. So what we've done is, in consultation with AGSA, we converted the target to calendar days. So a certain percentage to be dealt with within a certain number of calendar days. Now, by implication, the time that is allowed to process the evidence is the same, but it's now only expressed in calendar days. That is, now it appears to be longer, but it's the same principle that applies. So we have not, in essence, reduced the target. We just converted it into a different format, but the implication is exactly the same.
Thank you. General?
Thank you, Chair. I want to maintain my position when I was talking to the retention of the reduced targets. I wasn't saying reduced targets are wrong. I'm saying I was motivating around the retention of the reduced targets. I think the general is putting it clear. You are being assessed in terms of performance on 31 days. Let's make it literally so simple as like that. You start from the first up to the first, but the actual physical performance of individual members within the unit, it's 20 days, because the members are working from Monday to Friday. Then my argument was that it is very imperative to stick to what is actually obtaining in practice, because you can't be measured on 31 days, whereas you actually physically work on 20 days. That is the reason that actually influenced the reduce in terms of the target. Then coming to how do we relate to courts, we've got standard of performance where, for example, say if there is a sample or an exhibit which is sent in for analysis to the forensic, we say within 40 days we're going to give you the findings. But what is actually obtaining most of the time, hence we're raising these questions, it's when there is a commission of offense which involves a high-profile figure or high-profile cases that we actually categorize them. They want us to deal with them as routine. I think there was also a definition of routine and non-routine. Routine is where it is normal. You actually apply your applications in terms of the normal targets. And then the non-routine is where you give a specific analysis in terms of the expertise in that particular field. So unless there would be that particular case where it will be referred to us for attention, as far as I'm concerned, we're working very well with the courts. They understand us. If, for example, there is a specific case which is brought to court that is not going to observe the response time, which is 14 days, there is coordination between the MPA as well as our division in terms of how do we first process that, unless there will be a specific complaint pertaining to a particular case.
Thank you, General. There's just a follow-up from Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. As the explanations are coming through, I was thinking to myself, and being a scientist or a technician in a laboratory, is there any link to those people that deal with chemicals in there with the cases that they are dealing with? Or do they simply deal with what is in the laboratory itself? I'm trying to say, or what they do if it gets in court and some people are convicted, do they know that? Because as a person, I think it will make a difference if you know what you are doing. Is this guy who raped a six-month-old, and you can even do the work free of charge. You can work during the night if you know what you are dealing with. are they linked to the case itself, or are they simply in the laboratory trying to be human? I mean, if as a human being you will be patriotic or no, so that this case must be solved, I can work overtime. Thank you.
Member? General?
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members. The manner how we deal with every case that is coming to forensics is laid out in terms of the prescripts. There is what we call case management. Case management is where you receive a particular case for analysis, and all the applications that are going to relate to that case, be it scientific, physical, or chemistry, biology, it is going to be allocated to the relevant person, but they work them in terms of different stations. If I'll make an example of a firearm, you receive a firearm, one would think that firearm is only relates to ballistic experts. But on the firearm, you are able to pick up fingerprints, which is another field, and you are all able to pick up the DNA, what you call touch DNA. This is another field. But what we do, we open a case management register, which is going to say, for that particular case, what fields of specialization that you're going to apply there. Then you make a docket. We call it a docket. Then when the case is actually called up to court for outstanding forensic results, then there is an expert which is coming from our side to go and testify in that particular court. So all of them, they are linked in that fashion. And if it happens that when the case is actually tabled in court, and then there were challenges in terms of specifically ISO, we call it international standards, that it fell out of such, we come and rectify that situation. And if there is a scientist who's done it very wrong, it comes out in court. Now, there is no way that a case can come through the court without using our evidence. Then, if that case has a decision, for example, in terms of what the Honorable Kolapanat was asking, what is our relationship and cooperation between us as forensic and the courts? Now, if the case is going to be prolonged because there are some outstanding scientific results, there is that coordination between us and the prosecutors. And we've not seen a situation where the case is actually chucked out of court because there is no scientific evidence. It was before, but we worked on it, and I think it's zero up to now. I'm not sure whether I'm coming closer to your concern.
Honorable Marky, are you going to follow up?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I don't think my question came through. I was trying to say that whoever is dealing with a specific thing in the laboratory, does that person have an idea of the case itself? Or what I'm dealing with now is a case of that guy who killed six people? Or is it simply checking the fingerprints and it goes through? Does a person know, or what am I dealing with here, or does the person just deal with the DNA and pass it through?
Honorable Mshlongu, and I see there's another member of SAPS also raising his hand. Yes, Honorable Mshlongu.
No, Chairperson, no. I think I'm not trying to respond on behalf of the general, but... when the specimen, as a technologist myself, in the lab, I think, if you bring a specimen, there is a query. Query this, sent by the particular person to you to analyze. I think I'll try to be very simple because the journal is very sophisticated. If a patient comes, a patient who is not coming to a medical technologist, I'm talking about a pathological lab, is coming to a doctor. A doctor queries this thing to a technologist in the laboratory. A technologist will analyze this and say, the doctor, you said you are querying TB on this patient. In fact, it's not TB. is cancer. And if, and only if, that particular person who was working on that specimen will be required to go there, it cannot, it can just go there on request by those people to actually come and verify, but it's not his duty. It is just the person who actually requested that particular service to say, analyze this specimen on my behalf. I want to verify whether these are fingerprints of Marke. And if then those fingerprints are for Marke, then the one, I think the general, will just take it back to the person to say, Marke is implicated here. It's confirmed by our laboratory. But the technologist who is in the laboratory is just wearing his white coat, working on everything that is coming on with the requirement that must be tested on it. And these things take time to analyze and process and all that thing. And they've got time frames, and each thing has got its own timelines to say it will be ready by this time. I do culture. Culture will take 21 days, if needs be, for different reasons. So I think they cannot be directly involved. They cannot be directly involved because they are not on the field per se. They are just locked up in somewhere in the lab. Thanks.
Thank you, members. Let's get the responses. There's two hands from SEPS, I see, General.
Before, through you allowing the General to respond. General? Oh, okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's a clear specification when cases come to the lab. Firstly, people, the analysts, you need to be a university graduate for you to work there. Then after being a university graduate, you are going to get internal training. With that internal training, after that, the internal training is theoretical. After passing your theory, then you do practical. After doing practical, you undergo mentorship. And after mentorship, we give you a certificate of working independently. And the mentorship goes with the number of cases and the period that we mentor you. Let's take an example. If you are going to do DNA, you need to have a qualification in microbiology or biochemistry or zoology. And with that, you are in a position to start, we can introduce you to that kind of the field because you did it at the university. When you have to do drug analysis, you need to have chemistry 1, 2, and 3. That is organic chemistry, inorganic physical, and analytical chemistry. We need those basics for you to do that. For you to be a scientific analysis, whereby you do prime analysis, X-ray analysis, again, you need that kind of intense kind of chemistry. We do what we call car accident, mechanical engineering. For you to work there, you need to be a graduate in mechanical engineering. Then you can employ you. Then you go internal training. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you very much, General. General?
Yeah. Chair, I will pass it to General Magalela, but I wanted to make it more simple. A scientist was going to say, this is H2O, and it's hydrogen, two molecules of hydrogen compared to oxygen, but this is water, the simplest thing. So our answers are right. They describe how water is made of. But I think the honorable member wanted to know whether this is water. And I just want to give a simple answer. They don't get divorced from the cases that they are doing until they are resolved. And when they pick up that this case, the DNA they are doing for this case, link another case, they also develop interest. I just want to put it very simple. And that's a simple response. But General Magadela can close it.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm going to say the same. Also relates to Honorable Mhlongo. What is important with the lab? That's why most of the time they are called independent people. They must not be influenced by the activities of SAPS. For example, if you receive a fingerprint, what you look at the fingerprint, the set of fingerprint, as well as the name. You must not know the actual owner of the name. Then all what you analyze here, for you to be independent and to be working within the standard, so that this is accepted at court as coming from an independent analysis and view. You only analyze what is brought before you. You must not even be able to cover the history, how it came to the lab. You must look at what is in front of you. Is this a fingerprint? If it is a fingerprint, is it a human fingerprint? If it's a human fingerprint in terms of classification, who's that fingerprint? Then you compare that with your database. To say from the database we've got these people who are having same fingerprint, but in terms of characteristics of the fluid, this belongs to a person named this, according to. You don't need to know outside of that for your evidence to be credible. That is what I wanted to say, General.
Thank you very much. We want to move on, colleagues. Is it the same issue or... Okay, just the same issue because there's still other responses, then we'll go to round two. Let's get the same issue. Okay. No, but if it's another matter, let's keep it for the second round, unless it's... Is it related to the DNA? Yeah, let's leave it for the second round. General Sithole, let's get all the responses. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Just also to add that we also see the gaps between prosecution and forensic, we will work on improving them. The feedback on the Cyber Crime Center from a multidisciplinary's point of view, I think SSA has taken the first move to establish a cyber crime center. And the cyber crime strategy that we designed is then linked to the center. We have given directive that let us link to this particular center, which then bring in another role player in the cyber crime strategy. But the internal role players might need to add flesh, maybe general metadata and detectives.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the National Cybercrime Center, we as DPCI are supposed to be located there as investigators with all other role players within the SEPS environment. That's all I can say. We are part of it. We are not responsible to establish as DPCI a center.
Follow up on Bele.
Thanks, Chair. So does that mean, I'm working off information from the researchers, so I'm looking for the updates, does that mean the target I have of the information of 120 personnel, is that still valid? Is that the figure of what you would contribute to be housed in that center? Or is the picture looking different now, given that SSA has taken the lead?
Bele, you know?
Thanks, Chair. I think we as DPCI, as part of SEPS value chain, we would submit and have people sitting in that center. From an investigative point of view, DPCI must have a capacity, detectives, everybody has crime intelligence, because it's a center for everyone. The hub will be there for all of us to have capacities that will respond within that center.
General Uncle Barnard?
Do we have an end date for the establishment of this entity? Someone is putting it together. You're giving some staff, I presume there's SAP staff. I know there must be cybercrime specialists. You do have a tiny little unit about that big already. When will we be able to come and visit the center physically?
General?
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. In my discussion with the DG SSA, the establishment of this cyber crime center was already above 99%, which means it's ready to be functional. And also responding to the other question of the numbers, we've just spoken about the completed cybercrime strategy, the integrated one. We are going to link to the cybercrime center through the strategy. We're not going to link individual. That's why the General Matagata says we as sub-DPCI, CI together, we are going to present a collective capacity. But the accuracy of the the capacity we need there is going to be determined final by the strategy. We haven't decided to change the figure yet, but the strategy might adjust that is the figure. We're also foreseeing a need that our response to cybercrime will be expected to grow because your criminal modus operandi is moving more from the other normal modus operandi to cybercrime modus operandi. So the figure might then change, but we're going to do it by means of the strategy. As to when the center can be visited, I think the center belongs to SSA. We will engage with SSA and then indicate about the intention of the committee to visit. But once we are fully engaged, when we are fully deployed in the center, we are going to inform the committee to say we are fully deployed and we are fully functional. And then the committee then can be ready to come check us. But we will talk to SSA so that then they can also relate to the committee they're reporting to. Thank you.
Thank you, General. Honorable Matlongo, follow up.
Yes, thanks, Chairperson. I wonder, National Commissioner, if maybe you can clarify me. In my own naive thinking, I'm still of a view that DPCI will have to be an all-overarching organ that would even be capable of spiking even on general policing in the event, say, for example, you get infiltrated by some criminal syndicates and all that. Now, even only if you are put on the same line like that, I'm just trying to review this, taking, for example, the concept of USA FBI. Once these guys come, even the ordinary state police cannot simply say or deny the authority these guys wield in terms of control and capabilities. Now, if it is like this, will our DPCI ever be able to actually achieve the goal of being an elite squadron that can actually then put fear in the minds of the organized syndicates? Because I don't really think that it will help them. I don't know, maybe if I can be clarified. Not necessarily to say general policing must actually, or other divisions of policing must be divorced from cybercrime, but I'm looking at a way to say, what is it that can be done to actually give power to DPCI so that DPCI will be, because of the small force, I think, small as it is, it avoids its number. To me, it means small number allows it to remain pure and capable to track and counter anything that seeks to spoil its existence, because the general policing is a big organization that is even subject to what we have seen in the past. Now, if and only if we want to build an elite squadron, what is it that needs to be done in order to ensure that it can be an overarching body of state that will definitely give hope to all of us to say it has got superpowers to actually then deal with whatever form of organized criminal activities in the country, without actually then saying that it will go to CI, it goes to CI, only to find that that very same CI, it is influenced by certain syndicate groups. I'm worried. I'm just a bit worried about that.
Let's move on, General. Other responses? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, sir. Maybe I can just quickly move from this one. I think DPCI, by virtue of the legislation, has got all the powers they need But to live by the powers, you need resources. So I think all that needs to be done is for DPCI to be resourced at the level of that legislation. But then again, DPCI can't fight cybercrime alone because CI is the foundation. So you can't remove CI. And within detectives, it's not general investigation. It's only the dedicated organized crime side. So that's how we deal with it as integrated. But we will also support the DPCI with the level of resourcing so that we move forward. Honorable Chair, the Rhino syndicates. I think, Chair, when I was still Deputy National Commissioner, I came to the committee when Rhino poaching was sky high. I introduced a project at Kruger. That project stabilized rhino poaching in that environment, and there were several people arrested. That project is still in place, but what we're getting from the community is that maybe we need to shift more focus of the project to cover the KZN site. That is what we're exactly going to do until we have totally stabilized rhino poaching in the country. And if for any reason, anyway, criminals, your experience, criminals, they do what we call modus operandi shift. If you clamp down this one area, they shift the modus operandi to another area. So the project will actually be, the focus will be driven by the modus operandi shift. So we're going to cover the KZN site and any other site that is not yet covered. And Honorable Chair, I think we dealt with the relationship with NPA. We love each other. From Chair, just briefly, General Ngwenya will give the figures on cybercrime training, which is a link to the cybercrime strategy. Thank you.
Thank you, General. Thank you, Honorable Chair. In terms of the number of members who have already been trained for the investigative families, we already trained 1,612, and the training entails the following: introduction of electronic-related crime and first responder learning. What the electronic-related crime entails is that it talks to legal research and seizure for electronic devices related to cybercrime scene. And secondly, the first responder focuses on the analysis of seized devices and the preparation of evidence for court. Of the 1,612 members who were trained, 72 of those were trained in France on sexual-related electronic crimes. And for this financial year, in terms of our plan, we will be training 833 in terms of cybercrime. Thanks.
General?
Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Ms. Longo, follow up?
Yes. Is it an accredited kind of training, or maybe just attenders? Because, Chairperson, I think that if it is accredited, it motivates people to have a brighter future. And that will also help retention strategy within the police.
Thank you for that.
Honorable Chair, shall I verify that and come back? No.
General Sitori, you're welcome to go ahead.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The Karabo Mokoena case is part of the NPA relationship, which we'll be focusing on. And thank you. The postgraduate, the use of postgraduate law students, we buy the input, but we're going to link it to two concepts that we're dealing with in the turnaround. One is the multidisciplinary fusion center concept, and that's where we bring in other institutions, whether it's legal institutions, we're also bringing in universities in the fusion center. That also includes NGOs and others to assist in this particular question. But the second part of it, we're dealing with it in the powerhouse concept where we have made provision for the best practice center for the organization. So the intention will then be for us to get into this best practice in the Western Cape and see how we link it through to the best practice center. Then the use of monitoring and oversight report, this is also a process that I've already started. It starts with the monitoring and oversight reports from the secretariat, the portfolio committees, the auditor general, the internal audit, and all those particular oversight reports, we bring them together, we make one analysis. This also includes the inspectorate report. One of the things that we have actually identified and which we want to get rid of is to have auditor general's report that are more than 3 years old and they are still outstanding. But two, how do we relate and how do we deal with the findings and which of the findings are developmental in nature that requires of us to take the organization that is forward. That process is currently in place, but also dealing with that is the clearance. So they all actually going to be linked through management intervention and as well as internal audit. Yes, we also agree. There's also some lessons. Some of them they become innovative, but some of them are hard lessons, even from the current situation that we're addressing in the organization. And most of them are helping us to shape the organization better and further into the future. Then the 700,000 budget. Oh, thank you.
General, just a moment. Honorable Bailey, follow up.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick follow-up. Thank you, Commissioner, for the response. It is encouraging to know that those measures are going to be coming down the pipeline, but am I then to understand that prior to at least the establishment of management intervention as a mechanism and as an approach, the inputs and the feedback that was coming to the SAPS was then not being processed and integrated into improvements and reform processes, because I think that's been the impression that's been coming from various oversight bodies, is that in the monitoring they do and the feedback they were inputting into the SAPS, it was, you know, coming up against a brick wall, landing on deaf ears, and so that was the missed opportunity which exacerbated the problems we have. You know, these watching briefs were identifying problem stations where investigators either were not showing up for court hearings or the quality of dockets was shoddy, and therefore cases were then able to be chucked out the system. So was that the status quo previously, that things were not up to scratch?
Yeah, Honorable Chair, I'm always guided by one of the seven logics. Make peace with the past so as it doesn't spoil your present. I want to give a straightforward response. It was unstructured. It was there, but it was unstructured. With a turnaround, we said, let it be structured. And again, the principle which I'm actually adopting. When I improve on something, I usually do not want to say it's because others have failed. Yes, I think this is part and parcel of turning the organization around and improving it, moving forward. Things has been done, others can be done better. So that's how I want to put it, and we appreciate the input. We're going to make optimal use of it. The 700,000, Honorable Chair, is CJS funds. It's not necessarily part of the SAPS budget. That is why it is seen sitting somewhere as almost something that is it's standing alone. So it's dealt with by means of the CJS project. So I think that's how I can explain it. The 14% property crime and 18%, I think they have been explained. And then I've also explained the cyber crime tools and the cyber crime studies. The headhunting of retired detectives, I think firstly what is provided for in the turnaround, I have a scheduled conference with the police veterans, and I will be sitting with them, and we will be talking about the role they can play in making sure that we make optimal use of the capacity for policing that is sitting with the communities. And there are those who left policing while they still love it, and they can contribute from where they are. I've already engaged few of them, and they are very much excited. And if we talk of the detective capacity, like the honorable member has been relating to, I think one of them is old General Ngobeni. He actually said he could come in, sit here, there, and check dockets for us. So the outcome of that conference is intended to lead to that. I've also already made a pronouncement on the re-enlistments. And I think General Ngwenya would briefly relate on the figures. Thank you.
Thank you, General. Thanks, Honorable Chair. Already in 2016-17, we re-enlisted 310 detectives. 2017-18, we re-enlisted 113. And an additional 5 of detectives that are specialized in stock theft, and 4 of those who are specialized in FCS. We re-enlisted a total of 432. We will also be re-enlisting in this financial year as per directive by the National Commissioner. Honorable Chair, given the fact that this is an HR matter, we committed yesterday, if I may be allowed, please, we committed to dealing with the, checking the concern that was raised by Honorable Mhlongo regarding the alleged terrible treatment against a member of the SAPS, and I was fortunately involved in this particular member. When I called her, she recognized my voice, and she was able to say, "This is me, General." That a former colleague, it was in 2010. For a period of 2 years, 2010 to 2012, she has been continuously absenting herself from work. And in 2012, she got transferred to Bronkhorstspruit Police Station. Already at Bronkhorstspruit as well, she started absenting herself. And then we received an application for ill health retirement, which means she wanted to be boarded in terms of her health. We were receiving applications, reports from her doctors, and the applications for ill health retirement are dealt with at the headquarters, where the Deputy National Commissioner HRM is the chairperson. After receiving the applications, the so-called incident, the alleged incident that is said to have happened, which contributes to what is said to be ill treatment, happened. And what happened is that a colleague who was reporting to the member forwarded an SMS to say, "I am going to be killing members." And this SMS was directed to the whole station. And that colleague himself was also suffering from PTSD. Then this particular incident was investigated. The former member
who are alleged to have been ill-treated and not taken care of by the SAPS was requested to submit a statement for an interdepartmental case. She refused. She was also requested to submit a statement for a criminal, for investigation of a criminal case. She never cooperated also. She refused. And she was the only one who said, I received this SMS, and no any other in the police station, though it was directed to all other members. And at the same time, the application for ill health retirement has been running, and there was pressure from the doctors. In terms of our policies, we do give members who are allegedly suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, we do give them an opportunity to recuperate, and they get assessed continuously. There has been this pressure that this member is very sick.
Yeah, General, maybe, I mean, the detail is fine. The principle you can address, but I don't think the detail of the committee, can be provided in another forum. Otherwise, we're a bit pressed for time.
So. The member left the service as a result of her application for ill health retirement, which was granted. It is not true that the SAPS never took care of the member. That is the story. Now she wants reenlistment. That is why she is bringing all these things.
Right. Thank you, General. Let's go to the other responses. Thank you, General.
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. The last question is on the proactive moves to reduce the number of dockets on the hands of investigators. I think, number one, Honorable Chair, I've issued an instruction that the crime detection families must do a continuous docket analysis. There's something they call red dockets. All those dockets must be loaded to all running operations. Like, for instance, we've got Fiela 2. I gave them a directive. They must give me what is the total number of dockets loaded to Fiela 2 so that we fast track their reduction in the hands of the investigators, then so that they help picking up those suspects and then they can process them to court. All other operational interventions running so that this process is loaded. Secondly, in their session, which I attended, their planning session, I also directed them, I think the detective, they do not do the station profile analysis. And once you get a station profile inflated, the first thing you pick up is the number of dockets. They rise sky high. Now, I have directed that they should also monitor the station profiles, and I would, and this also linked to both modus operandi as well as root cause analysis. If there's a new uncontrolled development taking place and there's informal settlements that are mushrooming in a particular station area, the first thing you're going to see, you're going to pick up more cases. Yeah, because of the fact that that particular area, it changes your environmental design. So they are also now venturing into this particular exercise. The third one, management intervention, the downward management of the dockets in the hands of investigators. They're going to be coming with interventions so that we stabilize the dockets that is on hand. The last one, Chair, is the modus operandi counter strategy. With the modus operandi counter strategy, we look at those stubborn modus operandi that produces quite a lot of cases. We kill the modus operandi so that the cases that we accumulate, and then they actually cut down to size due to the prevention that is element. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, I want to move in the next half an hour to program 5, but there's some questions we must still ask, so let's keep it to the point, the follow-ups. General, is there still one outstanding? General?
Chair, there's one outstanding that was raised by both Honorable Mhlong and Honorable Mula, if I'm not mistaken, on the target of 18 on the DPCI program. The concern that it is a low target. I just want to again remind that this is just confined to the ACTT and their investigation on the number of members that are involved in corruption, where procurement fraud and corruption is involved. So it's an ACTT, but what had happened, we had a 30 number of case dockets that was the target previously over a period of 5 years, from 2014 to 2019. The concern was raised last financial year by the committee that it is very low, because per year it was about six or so. So we went back to the ACTT family and we indicated we are going to review the target. And we reviewed the target to 18 per year, but it is 90 over the five-year period of the MTSF cycle. But what I wanted to say was this is just about trial-ready case dockets. It's not as if we are not investigating corruption in entirety in the country. And therefore, there are cases of corruption located with commercial crime. There are cases that are outside of this, just this performance indicator, because this was just for the ACTT to be accounting here on this particular one. We have also another performance indicator that speaks to the involvement of officials within the JC, 1,000 that should be arrested. So this one is specifically 220 people who have benefited more than 5 million that we need to arrest. It's just that it's about that, but not necessarily it's all we are investigating on corruption is based on this target. Thanks.
Much. Right, let's go to the follow-ups, a couple from my side, and then I'll go to the other members. Maybe just on the issue of state capture. that is a major focus from law enforcement agencies. But I just want to get a sense in terms of the prioritization of resources. Where the additional resources from the police budget will be given to the DPCI. Because on the one hand, there's a lot of expectation in the community and in general. General Kana seems to be permanent in Parliament at Scopa. The Hawks are even used as a tracing agent, it seems, for one parliamentary committee. But that's not core business. So I just want to get an indication from the National Commissioner whether the DPCI will be given enough resources to ensure that they prioritize the state capture cases, that there can be results quite soon in terms of the various cases, and then detective services. We saw recently very good results, the arrest of senior policemen in the Western Cape involving in the selling of dockets. Now, the selling of dockets is what Corruption Watch indicated as petty corruption, grand corruption, but it's a matter that is prevalent. I just want to know what was the last year's results in ensuring that members who engage in that activity is brought to book, and what is being done internally to ensure that there is not the selling of dockets, 10,000 for drunk driving, 15,000 for this and that. What is being done to ensure that that matter is addressed, because it also contributes to corruption within the law enforcement agencies. Honorable Molobatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. What happened or what is happening to Senator Meyer's case? You know what is painful about this case is it's not like he was picked up dead somewhere in the street. He was shot in the full view of not only one person, more than five people in their full view. And there's nothing happening. You know, I remember the last time we heard about it was when General Munu was saying he compiled identity and he was saying, we got our men. He went on. And then he arrested the wrong chap, and he released him. That was the last time we heard about the Senator Meyer. Where is the hiccup? My next question is on, tell us about the progress in the Cleveland hostel killings. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Mabija, you covered. Thank you, Honorable Mula. You covered. Honorable Kolobana.
Thanks, Chair. I need a few figures. From the SAPS, how many
in the last year now, how many arrests were made? Because these are figures we can compare to your previous numbers. How many arrests made? How many of those cases went to court? How many convictions? Because, you know, we're used to, you make a million arrests, actually only 200,000 are caught, actually of those there's only 10 convictions. So we need to know the numbers, because those are the numbers that need to be improving, are the actual conviction rates in relation to your arrest numbers. From the forensic labs, what are the backlogs in terms of samples? I mean, that used to be a massive issue. And then it seemed the backlogs were going down and you were almost on top of it. I've heard, sadly, recently that the backlogs have gone up again. What are the backlogs in relation to the backlogs from last year, for example? And don't give me recent backlogs and then forget about those that are still hanging around from last year and the year before. So give us a detailed update on that. Saps, have you, I'm listening to you saying you take what the committee says, and you take it very seriously, and you like to implement what we say. But have you done a national client survey on what our citizens want from the SAPs? Has that ever been done? It's something you might want to consider. You've got all your stations as outlets, but a lot of people and a lot of CPFs have news and say, actually, the citizens would like you to do X, Y, and Z. Might give you some very valuable information. I've got a figure of 8.8 million South Africans falling prey to cybercrime in 2016. So I'm guessing that number, I don't have a more up-to-date figure, but we're probably heading up to 10 million. Until recently, there were just 30 people in that little unit that used to be hidden away somewhere in Pretoria. Thank heavens you're now training people. Someone's decided to take it seriously. Thank you, National Police Commissioner. But I'm very nervous that people very new on this cybercrime are going to be placed there as investigators who really haven't a clue. Are you looking to bring in external expertise? This is a highly technical job. And to try and track down someone who's just emptied his bank account and bounced it through five other bank accounts and it's ended up in his bank account, etc., is just, it's beyond pretty much anyone in this room, I would guess. So I'm interested in whether you're bringing in that kind of expertise. I didn't really have an answer from the DPCI on whether the NPNA are now acting with speed on cases you are giving. I said I have no doubt in my own mind that the dithering they did for 6 months was to let the Guptas pack up and go, plus certain others. And I want to know now that they're actually jumping when you give them a case. And finally, there must be someone here who can answer it. I know we dealt with it yesterday. In terms of the Central Firearm Registry, I've had very concerning information that people going to register their firearms are finding the firearm that they bought long ago and it was carefully re-registered and sold through a legal firearm gun shop are still registered in the previous guy's name. Now they can't re-register. Now they're in a total situation because, of course, you know, as we said, that firearm registry should just be raised to the ground and start again. But they're losing files. They're not registering files, and the results are going to end up with you back in court again to do with the firearm licenses. Thank you.
Honourable Bailey.
Thank you, Chair. Just two questions from my side. The first is similar to the last question from Honourable Caller Barnard, but relating to the Criminal Record Centre. If we can just get an outline of what is the current state and capacity of the Criminal Record Centre in carrying out its function. Every now and then, although increasingly less so over the last year and a bit, one used to get complaints from members of the public who were needing to get a police clearance certificate, and they went to go do their fingerprint at the station. They pay their 50 or 150 rand, and they get told it's going to be dispatched to Pretoria, and they'll get an SMS when it's ready, and then, whoops, and they just wait, and they wait, and they wait, and they wait. But like I say, it does seem to be a declining trend. So I'd just like to know what is the state of play, especially around capacity. Are there vacancies, shortages, machine technology challenges around that kind of function? And then linked to that, just as part of the first question, it's a question that was raised with me by someone last year, and I just thought to ask it now directly. Has the SAPS thought about and looked at a digitization and diversification approach in that regard? Because the public-facing aspect of it, collecting the fingerprints, is fundamentally a technical and administrative function. You know, somebody rolls their fingerprints and it lands up in a database somewhere. And so the question I was asked was, why are we still using the ink and paper-based system when we have electronic or technology options? And that speaks to the digitization. And I know that links to TMS and it's in the context of the budget constraints, so I'm aware of the parameters for that. But then secondly, in terms of diversification, we know, for example, that Home Affairs, I think Home Affairs still does it, but certainly many embassies and consulates outsource the administrative collection of documentation and of certain things to a private company. I think VFS is the major one. So that if you outsource the collection function, obviously accredited, monitored, you make sure that everything is above board. But if it's outsourced, firstly, it then saves the workload on the parts of the SAPS as the police stations and as the CRC, which can also potentially proliferate the number of outlets that people can go to. And if the fees go up, so be it. I think many people would be willing to pay a bit more of a premium for quicker and quality service. But have we looked at that, diversifying primarily through outsourcing or any other models that might be available, of that public-facing CRC function, just collecting the fingerprints using technology and thus streamlining those processes? And then my second question, Chair, is an issue that has come up in at least a handful of my station oversights is the capacity and sometimes location of the detectives' offices, where the physical offices where detectives work. In the case of Berea Station, I know the issue is that the detectives are based a couple of kilometers away, and so there's a whole logistical issue around dockets going from station to detectives and so on. And then as the committee saw at the Nongoma police station, under capacity, you know, small offices, they cramped three or four detectives in what should be maximum two detectives in one office, you know, they're, you know, so when they have to interview witnesses, everybody else must clear out for privacy, you know, desks are competing with space for filing cabinets, it's basically omunye phezu komunye. So, on what is, and I know it links to capital works and therefore public works, which is a whole other mess, but what's the plan for addressing the working conditions for investigators around their offices? And look, I take the argument that detectives don't necessarily and fundamentally have to be based at the police station, because generally they're spending much of their time out in the field. They're tracing witnesses. They're going to crime scenes, whatever the case might be. So I think the location is case specific, but there needs to be just a general reconfiguration and addressing of that aspect of the working conditions of detectives and their physical offices. If we can get some information and some light shed on what the plan is around that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. General Sitole.
so much, Honorable Chair. The your first question, Chair, with regard to supporting DPCI with the resourcing regarding the investigation of state capture. I think, firstly, yes, I'm going to give them undivided support. And secondly, I wanted to confirm that DPCI is part of the business case that we are taking to Treasury. We'll just also make sure that this particular aspect is covered. The results of last year pertaining to the selling of dockets, including the measures, I will give that to the detectives too.
General?
Thank you, Chairperson. Not necessarily looking at that specific docket, but let me just go further on what are the plans in place to make sure that we don't have the recurrence of that particular incident. It is the capacity within the detectives that was built recently of anti-corruption that is looking at a corruption that is only happening within. And on the issues of the dockets and following up of the dockets, it's part of our docket progress management where every month and every week we get the number of dockets and the missing dockets that has been picked up at the police station, and to follow up on those that we do not have or those that will be reported as missing to check with a particular unit and provincial deputy provincial commissioner as to what is it, where is that particular docket is, and we are getting those progress reports. We will have a one-on-one with each province that will start next week up until the time that we'll have a collective crime detection, a meeting where we'll look at all provinces, because we believe that each province has its own dynamics and there are specific challenges for each province that we'll have to look at in terms of the docket management. Thanks, Chairperson.
Maybe just on that, maybe if we can give you a request to management, Corruption Watch indicated that the previous year they got about 1,000 Wangrand complaints generally about corruption in the police. Will it be possible for police management to follow up with Corruption Watch on any issues regarding selling of dockets especially? Because that's a huge risk for the law enforcement agencies going forward.
We'll definitely do it, Chairperson. Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The Sandra Meiwa case, I think we've made too much promises. And the last time I reported on it, I said the next report we wanted to give, it should be an action-based report on Sandra Meiwa. Actually, today I'm personally involved in dealing with certain information from the committee. I'm going somewhere. I wanted to choose that I don't make any promises, but I think this case is at the top of the high priority agenda of the cold case strategy, and the teams, the investigation teams, has been reviewed. It has also been lifted higher up in terms of investigation. Maybe that's the only things I might just request that I relate on. Thank you, Honorable Chair. The Cleveland hostel killings, I think I'll give it to the detectives.
Thank you, National Commissioner, General.
Chairperson, thanks again. And National Commissioner, we are having a task team that is working on Cleveland investigations. We have dedicated a person at the level of a brigadier from my office that is going to KZN every month to sit with the whole team to check the progress. I just do not have specific numbers, but there has been some arrests that were made, including one of our own that was arrested in one of the cases, and I know there are new cases that are coming that we are analyzing to check if they are also linked to the previous cases and whether they are politically motivated or is just the crime that has been committed. But we do have a team that is dedicated only to the Cleveland investigation. And this was followed up by establishing a capacity within Cleveland hospitals itself and having that satellite police station that is operating there so that new cases can also be followed up and we do not miss the link between the previous cases in terms of modus operandi and the newly the cases that will be newly reported at that particular satellite.
Thank you, General.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair. If there's a need in certain instances or certain cases, we can give written reports, but it would exclude diverse investigations. Because if, say, for instance, this particular case is linking quite a lot of people, if you start reporting progress and taking it out without rounding it off, then it might warn the other criminals. But suffice to say, yes, there is progress. There are some arrests, and we can keep the committee informed. The arrest totals, actually, I think General Ravi was trying to contend with the question, simply because we do not have all the information at our disposal by now. What we can do, we can ask to be given an opportunity, we can do the breakdown and give it in writing.
That will be fine, yeah, if we can have that then in the next week, yeah. Thank you, General.
Can I just confirm with your permission, Honorable Chair, from the Honorable Member, it should include all crimes?
Indeed. The total figure, arrests, of your arrests, how many go to court? Of the ones that go to court, how many convictions do you have?
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The backlogs will give it to both forensic and detectives to address.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Honorable Members and the National Commissioner. In terms of the backlogs, we are actually assessing the performance. The national picture will reflect from the contributions from the provinces. Currently, what we have nationally, the backlog is 1%. You must remember that our target is 10%. So we are far beyond 10%. And I know that the feeling would be that it should be zero. But we are working towards that. Hence, we're having a target of 10%. And the first quarter was 1%, second quarter 5%, and the third quarter was 2.8. That is a national picture. I'm not sure, National Commissioner, whether must I also reflect to provinces, or this is just suffice. But I want just to allay fears, we are not having that much backlog, and we have actually achieved also our targets in terms of how to manage and address backlog.
Indeed, if we could have the provincial ones. The difficulty I see is that, of course, the KZN laboratory was flooded out for like the fifth time, so they've abandoned that building and I think gone mainly to Joburg and Pretoria. So if you could give all the figures, please. So in total, I'm looking at an 8.8% backlog nationally from what you gave me. I don't know which lab that refers to. Because nationally, to me, says nationally, that's the whole nation. But you're saying somehow that figure is different from the provincial figures. What do you consider to be the provincial figures? Cape Town and now part of Durban, or what?
Not sure. If they don't got the exact information, if we can also have that in writing, if you don't have the current picture.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Can we request we do it in writing so that we are accurate to the question? Thanks very much.
Apologies. May I ask that those figures are given in numbers and not percentages, or both? But I don't want to be told 1% of what. I don't know. So I do need the figures, please.
In case we give the percentages, would qualify them with figures. Thank you. Yes. Honorable Chair, the national client survey. We buy the input. I can only say what I have instructed within the service charter process was customer gap analysis to be conducted by those who are relating to the customers. But I think the input will also assist us to broaden. That is the focus. So we will consider it. Then, Honorable Chair, the consideration of external expertise to beef up the cybercrime that is capacity. I think firstly, I just need to indicate that there's other countries that we worked together with that in terms of certain cyber-related crimes, like remember child pornography. We had Netherlands, I think there was almost four countries. We actually trying to sustain that partnership because cybercrime is an international, that is modus operandi. But as we are formalizing the strategy, we would then like to formalize also the benchmarking and as well as the best practice sharing at an international level. But I also equally need to indicate that internally, SAPRIC has got cybercrime capacity, and they are also equally prepared to share with us, but within the integrated partnership strategy. We will not exclude all other partners within the country, yes, because the intention is just to beef up the multidisciplinary collaborative approach into it. The NPA response to the cases, I think I'll give it to Detective Ntibiza.
Thank you, General. General Matakata.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Kola Barnett, the NPA, first, if I must just take us back, the NDPP at that point even said they take their time. I don't know what their speed in terms of the time they take, but we still have not had cases that would have been referred to them, and then there's a necessary speed. They take their own time saying they have to apply their mind. So I don't know what is the speed from their side, but cases are still taking their prolonged time because they have to apply their mind in deciding.
Thank you. General Sitoni?
Could I have a definition of a long time? We saw the Gupta one, 6 months. Is that an average? When you've done your whole investigation, you hand it to them on a place, are you, what is the sort of time we're looking at?
Thanks, Chair. Look, we have given them cases. I even had to compile a list of cases that we had looked at that has been a year and beyond, that we're still there waiting for decisions to be taken by the NPA. And I think it's not affecting DPCI only. The same was said by IPID and I think that. So it is difficult for us really to even indicate what is their time, turnaround time in taking a decision on any investigation because they decide. And I think after that session, with a private interview, the NDPP referred one of his challenges to capacity that prosecutors are leaving and all that. So it is a bit of a challenge for our side. I don't know what is their turnaround time.
Honorable Mshlongo.
Chairperson, may I know, for extradition process to be initiated, is it in the hands of DPCI or in the hands of NPA?
Member? General?
Thanks, Chair. It is within the hands of NPA, but I think we have responded, and I might be aware what the probability is referring to, that in some of these matters, because they are continuous, especially the state capture investigations, there are ongoing investigations that might implicate the very same people. And it was explained that he didn't want to go there, extradite them, but wait for all these matters to be finalized, and then we go through that process.
Thank you very much, General Sitole. The other responses, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I think we will also escalate the challenges by NPA to the criminal justice cluster so that there is also support given to them. The firearms which get stolen and still registered in the other names, they are part of the investigation. We give it to detectives to relate. Are you there, sir? These firearms which get stolen, subject to open investigation, and they don't change the registration, they are sold to firearm dealers. Yes.
These are not stolen firearms.
Okay.
They're simply someone goes to a firearm dealer,
yes,
purchases a firearm, fills in all the paperwork, hands it in, and next thing he goes a year later to renew his license and is told, that doesn't belong to you, it belongs to Fred. Fred's been dead for 5 years, his wife handed it in to be sold, they filled in the paperwork, but you know where the paperwork is. It's in those floor-to-ceiling piles of garbage around the firearm registry. So that's my fear.
Right, thank you very much, Member. General?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I think we will address it within the firearm control. That's part of the firearm control system. And we will then do an overall check. So that they can also check with the dealers, because the inspection of the dealers, it's within our mandate. So.
And Chair, when do the dealers get to inspect the firearm registry? Because you're now carefully blaming the firearm dealer. He wrote all the paperwork, he gave it, he handed it in. And a year later, the gun is still under his name instead of his name. You can't blame the firearm dealer. Sorry for you. Try again.
Thank you.
No, Jefferson, I think let us defer this matter, because I know it with me, with my firearm. You got told that no, this serial number for this firearm belongs to a particular person. That, no, but I've never changed to be Philip. What are you talking about? I'm talking about the live case. Me personally, you buy a firearm, you are an owner. Now, you are told different stories. I think let us debate, because that means there is a particular problem somewhere within the firearm registry. There is a serious, serious problem there.
Yeah, Chair. Yeah, can I correct it? I did not blame the firearm dealers. I blame us. And I say, we will take this matter up within the firearm registry, because it's our responsibility to inspect the dealers. Then we will also then put the necessary measures to make sure it's corrected. Chair, there was then the question of the clearance certificates within the Criminal Record Center and whether there's challenges. I'll give it to Forensic.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Members, and National Commissioner. We have a turnaround time from the day of inception when we receive the application and up until the application is sent back as results. The application is submitted, I think all of you know, through your set of fingerprints. And we work on the set of fingerprints, whether you've got records in the first place or you are circulated as a wanted person. Then if we get that clearance, we issue that certificate. How do you communicate with the members of the public? There are various ways. The first one is then automated SMS. I think Honorable Members mentioned it. Once you receive the automated SMS that says that your clearance is ready, you can come and fetch it at any time. Currently, or present, we are at 98% release of those clearances. So unless there will be a specific case where we found that maybe, but we are currently, I've confirmed it also on our systems, we're at 98% in terms of that performance. Thank you.
Thank you, General. General Sitole.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The next question was on digitalization, the consideration thereof. I just wanted to say our team, TMS, has been upfront in terms of this. They've already presented a turnaround plan on how do we intend to move to digitalization, and is also linked to the review of the technological requirement for policing. Of course, the resource requirement attached to the review is one that is going to be one of the big considerations, but we're linking part of it also to the business case. Then the outsourcing of the collection function of documents, it's something that we'll consider, but we'll also do a thorough risk analysis because we're not just the same as any other that is entity. Some of the documents may be very risky, and we will only then consider what is feasible. And where it is not feasible, we'll rather decide to beef up the function from within. Then the location of detectives, which is the last question. I think, Chair, we have related on our challenges with public works. Fortunate enough, I've been sitting with the DG. And I think public works, it's not very close to respond to our policing needs as far as buildings are concerned. And we've made several appeals, but the discussion is also at another level. I think we have submitted a long report to our minister to engage with the Minister of Public Works. Because it's not only the detectives or the police stations. There's more serious part of the buildings. We've got the forensic labs. We've got CI. We've got DPCI. I think we also came here. We experienced break-ins. That is all over. The location, number one, become the first risk. Because if it's isolated, criminals can also see and the specific dockets they're looking for and the specific information. But the DG has agreed with us that we need to then sit together and come up with an integrated plan between ourselves and public works. So we've got another meeting coming where we will be discussing the review of the buildings. One of the simplest aspects that we've put forth was a question with regard to why are we continuing with lease for policing buildings, yet there's an option for rent to buy. Because if we are leasing a building, the owner of the building knows how to come through to the building, no matter how much security you can put. And he's also in full control of that particular building. So to us, it is a risk. But they then also agreed with us. They said it's possible to actually start that process, and they can change for subs and begin to say when they acquire a building, they say we pay rent for 15 years, then we own the building. So it's part and parcel of such discussions that we're going to engage with. But we're going to look at critical areas, the worst hit, so that we get a prompt response to them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, General Sitoli. Honourable members, we move to Program 5, the last program, Protection and Security Services. Let's ask SAPS to present. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'm starting by presenting a brand new divisional commissioner, and he's coming to swiftly. Our presentation will be led by Major General Ravi. Thank you.
General Robbie.
Honourable Chair, members, thank you. The last program within the SAPS APP is Program 5, Protection and Security Services. Starting with the layout of the program, the purpose of the program is to provide protection and security services to all identified dignitaries and government interests. We have four sub-programs, VIP Protection, Static Protection, Government Security Regulator, and Physical Security Compliance. The expenditure estimates associated with Program 5 is as follows. The total financial implication for 2017-18 amounts to $2.8 billion. The breakdown is VIP protection services, $1.4 billion, increasing to $1.5 billion. Static security, $998 million, increasing to $1.06 billion. Government security regulator, $133 million, reduced to $112 million. And operational support, $270 million. Reduced to $267 million. So if we look at the two totals, it's $2.8 billion in the 2017-18 financial year, increasing to $2.942 billion in the 2018-19 financial year. The notes at the bottom, VIP Protection Services provides for the protection of the President, the Deputy President, former Presidents, their spouses, and other identified dignitaries while in transit. Static and mobile security provides for the protection of other local and foreign dignitaries in places in which all dignitaries, including persons relating to the President, the Deputy President, are present. And compensation is a prominent element for all the protection security functions with significant overtime cost, and travel and subsistence costs are also prominent. Moving to the content of the respective sub-programs, focusing first on the sub-program VIP protection. The strategic objective is minimize security violations by protecting foreign and local prominent people and securing strategic interest. If we look at the objective statement, the provision of in-transit and static protection, and Honorable Chair, you will note that most of the indicators within this respective environments are quantified as percentages, and the first one, a percentage of protection provided to VIPs without security breaches. The target is set 100%. Basically, what it implies is no security breaches. The percentage of protection provided at identified government installation and identified VIPs without security breaches, the target is also set at 100%. And as I indicated, this is within the sub-program VIP protection. Within the sub-program government security regulator, the regulation of physical security in identified government buildings and strategic installations, the percentage of national key points to be evaluated, a target is set at 100%, and the number involved is a total of 200 to be evaluated. With reference to strategic installations to be audited, the target is 51.36%, and that is a total of 132 strategic installations to be audited out of a total of 257. I would say that what I've just presented is the protection and security services. Now moving to the presidential protection services with a specific emphasis on the President. The provision of in-transit and static protection, the performance indicator is the percentage of protection provided to VIPs without security breaches. It's a similar target, 100% no security breaches. And then as far as static protection is concerned, at identified government installations and VIP residences without security breaches, the target is also set at 100% or no security breaches. The national key points that relates to presidential protection is a total of 11. And as far as that is concerned, the target is set that 11 or 100% of the national key points that relates to the presidential protection environment needs to be evaluated in the upcoming financial year. Honorable Chair, those are the indicators associated with Program 5. Thank you, sir.
General Sithole, anything to add from your side?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. The first one is just to inform the committee, the current head of presidential protection has taken up a post in the provincial government in KZN. So currently the post is vacant, and the divisional commissioner is in charge of both presidential as well as the protection and security. That post is going to be advertised this weekend. The second part is when I spoke to about the reorganization and rationalization. Through the reorganization, we intend to move protection and security to the Secret Service, that is in environment. So from the intended work studies, it's likely to become a directorate for protection services. Thank you.
National Commissioner, members, let's go to questions. Honorable Kola Barnard, Honorable Mula, Honorable Bele, and Honorable Molobatsi.
Thanks, Chair. How do you mitigate against the incidents that are perhaps incorrectly regarded as security breaches? When a VIP is in a VIP vehicle and the vehicle is speeding and it crashes, that's hardly a security breach. It's just a car accident. But somehow it could be registered as such. Now, is speeding in any way a contravention of the security policies, or is it actually policy to do 180 kilometers an hour? I've been in a vehicle where the man wouldn't stop doing 180 despite carrying a couple of MPs to the airport, none of whom were late because the VIP people were pushing him to drive at that speed. So it becomes quite ridiculous, frankly. What engagement has been undertaken in terms of the compliance with the National Key Points Act and then the technological changes to the systems that are going to have to take place when the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act finally comes into operation in due course? Is that all up to speed? Is it ready to go? And then I speak about KZN here, and there were some in Gauteng too, we had a terrible spate of VIP protection attacks on citizens. There were actually VIP fellows who shot out of the windows of a car into a car of a mother and husband with their two little girls in the back taking a Sunday drive, and they shot at them because they didn't move out of the way sufficiently. And that was happening quite regularly in KZN. Have there been any such attacks or reports of, for some reason it happens regularly in Yolundi, where the VIP units speed through the town and kill people who happen to be standing in the road? Any of those in the last year, they're not going to be listed as some kind of security breach, because shooting at civilians in their cars and running over civilians it's like a blip on their radar, but it's quite important to the citizens involved. How are the VIP residences protected by the Presidential Protection Services different to those protected by the Protection and Security Services? Is there a different way you protect a house that someone fancy lives in? I'm not sure. Could you explain the differences and the difference in quality and the differences in what they do when they stand in front of a presidential house or a minister's house or anybody else's house who's got to have one of these people around? There were a lot of reports of so-called VIPs mistreating their VIP protection members, making them stay out till all hours while they visited certain people all night, even pictures of them making VIP protection men carry handbags for them, etc. I mean, utter humiliation, frankly, and treatment of professionals. So are there further reports of that come to you? If so, we need to deal with that, please. And there are 11 presidential national key points protected by the Presidential Protection Services. What are those? I don't understand how there can be 11. And finally, is the security evaluation questionnaire, the one that you use, it evaluates the national key points, has it been regularly updated and has it been reformulated to fit in with the new act that will come in due course? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Mula.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of the performance indicator that relates to the number of national key points evaluated in compliance with the National Key Points Act 1980, has there been any engagement on the needed changes to the system when the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act comes into operation, which will presumably occur within the 2018-19 financial year. My second question, the SAPS uses a security evaluation questionnaire for the evaluation of the NKPs. Is this questionnaire regularly updated, and how is the circulation of the questionnaire managed? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mulabatsi.
Chairperson, this question has nothing to do with Program 5, but it's a SAPS question. I want to know the situation regarding the Provincial Commission of KZN. What is the situation there? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Bailey, and then Honourable Mukhlungu. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just one question, because I'm covered by the colleagues on other points I had to raise. On the indication the National Commissioner gave about the potential transfer of at least elements of the program to the Secret Service, I just want to check, will the transfer, if it's not finalized and still to be subject to whatever study needs to be done, if the transfer goes ahead, would the budget go with the functions transfer, or would the budget stay with the SAPS? Because then I would like to urge that, as far as possible, the budget stays with the SAPS. Secret Service has got their money, and we can't look into it, so we don't know how much it is. But if we can transfer the function but keep the budgets, that opens up more fiscal breathing room for the SAP to address the budget constraints issues we've been talking about since Tuesday. Yeah.
Usually the money follows the function. Honorable Mukhlungu, yeah.
No, thanks very much. Chairperson, what I wanted to find out, though is just a bit out, but it's part of it, is the report that came yesterday, that was released yesterday, regarding the uncovered plot against CIC Julius Malema by the right-wingers. Whether then... My question will be whether then the assessment is being done of the level of this threat, and as to whether the level of assessment of right-wing uprising in the country, its possibility and its threats, has been worked out, is being worked out, because I'm raising this, Chairperson, because when Comrade Krisani was assassinated, if it wasn't really for President Mandela to come in and take the lead before he could even become an officially elected president, this country was going to burn. So I'm raising this because these people who are actually coming up with this, maybe they haven't actually done their homework well. They haven't done their homework well, thinking that maybe by killing Julius Malema, they can just solve the problem. Unfortunately, those who have it in this country will lose everything, because black people really are tired of being given an empty dummy of freedom. Black people want real, substantive freedom, of which then they are justified in that. Now, to be threatened by right-wingers, I think it's a serious warning to them that those people, if they didn't learn a lesson of what happened in Northwest when they thought that black people were going to be used as their shield of defense before 1994, I'm just saying this, National Commission, so that you guys warn these people, because they will regret. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable, I just want to, Honourable Markey, are you covered? Honourable Mbele?
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, it's a second question that has slipped my mind. The Commissioner and his team will be aware of the reports that was released by the Institute for Race Relations about the VIP protection environment by Mr. Van Onselen. And the last I saw of the SEP's response to the content of that report was that it was being studied by the SEPs, and the response would be forthcoming. Can I please get an update as to whether the study of that report has been completed and what is the analysis and action plan going forward? Because it did raise significant questions around the cost escalations previously, not this year, which we've acknowledged, in the budgets of this program. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, honourable members, for the questions. General Sitole and your team, you're welcome to respond.
Yeah, thanks, honourable Chair. I'll try to take the big ones and give the operational ones to the divisional commission. I suspect. Yeah, Honourable Chair, I wanted to start with the one of shifting the division to Secret Service. There's no intention to shift it away from police. We're going to keep the division and the budget. The intention is to translate it into a protection and security dispensation. At the present moment, it is under visible policing. And it's not a visible policing component, it's a secret service component. And if we deal with the review or we escalate it into a directorate, it will remain within the police, but it will also link to the ministry and the national commissioner. But it will not be governed by policing policies. It will be governed by secret service policies. And we also intend to upgrade it to international standards of secret service. So that is just the intention. And that's how we are anticipating the work study to come up to. The one of Mr. Julius Malema, I wanted to start by saying to the Honourable Member, it will not be necessary for the Honourable Member to protect Mr. Malema, the police will do. And we also wanted to allay his fears. And the only thing we can confirm is that a formal threat assessment has already commenced on this particular matter. And I would like to end it there because I don't want to expose, yes, the vulnerabilities in terms of this. Then, Honorable Chair, I think in terms of reports whether incident has occurred or not, the divisional commissioner will respond. I only want to talk to principals. Our members are not allowed to speed unless there's an emergency attached to the function that the VIP must perform. If they so do, they are violating the traffic rules, but at the same time, the disciplinary code within the organization. We've had instances in the past where members were forced by dignitaries to drive beyond the speed, but when I was there, I personally engaged them, and I approached them with the dignity they deserve, but I told them the truth, and they supported us. They started supporting us. Up until the time I left, we didn't have incidents where VIPs were forcing members to speed up. But maybe the divisional commissioner can just have a little bite into it, with your permission, Chair.
Thank you, General Sitole.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members and the National Commissioner. Indeed, in terms of the question of the speeding of members of the VIP, whether in terms of shooting, as the honorable members ask, we don't have any incident, you know, in the, which would be 2017, 2018. There's not been any report. In fact, I can also still add that usually what would happen, because we must also remember that the, whether it's the ministers, especially the ministers and also at the provincial level, the vehicles, those main vehicles, they're bought from departments. Now, if there would be evaluation of a speed limit, then we then discuss with the departments that, you know, on a monthly basis, if they are such, they should be able to give us, so that then we can be able to take decision and say that particular member that was found to have, you know, violated the traffic rule, then should be able to pay. So those are the rules that would have and agreements with departments. But it's safe to say that at this point, in terms of 2017, 2018, we don't have any incidents.
General? General Sitole?
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. I will also give the Divisional Commissioner the first bite on the question of the technological changes on the in terms of the NKP Act. I can only lay the foundation by saying, in terms of the review for technology that we envisaging for policing, it's more, it's a more requirement in the ANKP, in the national key points, because they are carrying the well-being that is of the country. But I'm sure the Divisional Commissioner will then talk to the structures that are governing the NKPs and the, how this could be moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, National Commissioner. In terms of really the technology within that environment in the space of the national key point, I think because we must also remember that we're governed in terms of by international standards. For an example, if we are talking about within the aviation space, then it means we have to adhere. You know, if we talk like the OR Tambo, when I'm saying that in terms of technology that should be used, it means it's governed at the international level. Then it would, we should also talk to the training, for an example, that would employ. And same applies whether within the petrol industry. It means it's governed also in terms of the, it would be the national standard as well as also international standard. So I think we're moving, but also I can add that the other challenge probably that I can raise is that there is a gap in terms of our own officers when you compare with national key points. Now, from our side, within the police or the division itself, you'd find that an officer would be responsible, whether within the aviation or petrol industry or water. Now, we want to move away from that so that we can have specialized individuals so that we can meet, because now if you have an individual that will specialize in different areas, it becomes difficult. So we want to also be able to match, you know, each key point to say that, because they are categorized in terms of their areas, whether, as I say, that, you know, aviation, or it would be, as I say, that petrol industry and so on. So this is where we're moving towards, whereby we can recruit more and be able to specialize, so that then we can also be able to send them at the international, you know, so that we benchmark also with international standard. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The VIP attacks where people get shot, I think the Divisional Commissioner can relate whether did we experience any such incidents. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and National Commissioner. I can confirm that 2017, 2018, we have not had any incident of shooting. Because, I mean, if it, something would happen, like the Honorable Member have said, the normal, you know, it would be criminal and also departmental. So we take steps if it would happen. I mean, for an example, the one that you are probably you are referring to in KZN, which is quite I mean, I think years back, then those members would be taken through the process, because we cannot have a situation whereby us as police officers, even if you are within the environment of protection, then we're above the law. We're not above the law. It means we have to abide in terms of the law.
Thank you, General. National Commissioner.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The difference between the residents by the president as well as the ministers, I'm actually tempted to start with Olympus has fallen. I think the quality and the grade that you put at the president and as well as at the ministers, the president is entitled to a higher grade, because the attack will also not be at same level. And the, one of the reasons why we want to move protection and security to a secret service dispensation, it's actually the need for the grading of protectors. Because in the current system in subs, you can't grade them. If you grade them, you must give them ranks. And then you promote him warrant officer, he become a captain, must go to office, and you must move him out of the field. And that's where you need the most experience in that particular field, so that they can be able to foil down an attack. At the present moment, we're actually still doing it at a risk, because a constable cannot stop a terrorist coming into the house, either of a president or even a minister, because the experience is not yet up to that particular level. So that's the balance that we want to deal with. So the difference is the grading, and obviously the threat level at president as well as the ministers is also different. So hence the deployment is guided by that. The VIPs mistreating members, I think we decided through the protection and security turnaround strategy to come more closer to our members, so that they are telling us everything about the dignitaries. But we also got closer to the dignitaries themselves, so that they're able to tell us the truth if they've got any challenges with the members. So, and this helped us to resolve these problems. There were a few incidents which I think we actually overcame. But maybe the divisional commissioner can just relate whether could there be any still challenges at the moment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. And thank you, National Commissioner. Again, I think we don't have any, you know, cases that have been reported, but probably also it would be important to raise that, you know, there is systems in place where if, for an example, a member would have been mistreated by a VIP, so it means we'd expect that member, which we always would emphasize that it should be in writing where there's a complaint. Then from our side as management, then as the National Commissioner says, then we'd then engage that particular VIP and say that, no, this is the complaint, so that you don't have only one-sided approach, because even the VIPs themselves, you know, whether you talk about the ministers or deputies, they would complain, and also it will be done in writing. Therefore, they will then also engage them and be able to take corrective measures. If we say that it's a serious matter, whether from our side, then it means it will be escalated then to the National Commissioner as well as to our minister, so that then there's also that engagement to say that, no, certain, I mean, mistreating of members, it cannot be permissible or allowed, because also they are human beings.
General, Honorable Kalibona.
So what I'm hearing from this is that it is still happening, but you're dealing with it.
General?
Through you, National Commissioner. We don't have currently I would say that yes, there is a case, but as I say that there is a process that we follow in terms of process flow. If there's a complaint from a member in terms of how he or she was mistreated, then we then engage the particular VIP. So I'm just trying to explain the procedure or the process flow.
Thank you very much, General Sithole. Our responses?
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. The 11 presidential national key points, I think I can give them to the Divisional Commissioner.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and the National Commissioner. The 11 key points they would talk to within the presidential, it will talk to the, you know, the official residence of the president, the deputy, as well as the private residence and the formers, because remember we have the four former presidents, so it means whether, because all of them that declared as key points, so it means they account for those, the four former president and the two deputy, two former deputy president and the president and the deputy president, the current one.
Yeah, we can just include the union building. It's one of them. The evaluation form review. I think, firstly, there's a continuous assessment of the evaluation form, which is informed by what we refer to as protection and security modus operandi, development and advancement. Because when you have your protection and security modus operandi, firstly, it gets directed to national key points. And remember, in this country, there's two national key points that can switch off the whole country. And there's also another national key point that can burn half of South Africa into ashes within 45 minutes, if it's touched. So if there's modus operandi directed there too, we also then look at the form. But secondly, the process of moving away from the National Key Point Act to the Critical Infrastructure Bill is also continuously updating the form until we have completed that particular process. So I think this is what I can say at the moment with regard to the form. The form and the questionnaire, I thought they are the same. It could be my English is not, would be more stuck to the form. But then, Chair, the PC for KZN, I think firstly there was an investigation, there was an inquiry, then she took the organization to court. We won the court. Presently, we are proceeding with the tribunal. We only heard, we didn't receive it formally, that she is intending to take the organization on the Concord. Yes. So, but at the present moment, based on the previous outcome, we're proceeding to the next step.
Yes, Honourable Members.
Last one, I promise. Are the legal fees for the KZN much suspended, Provincial Commissioner? Are they being paid for by the SAFs, the taxpayer? Because I know, for example, they did not pay. She chose not to allow to pay the SAFs to pay, for example, General Boyson and Co. But I'm guessing hers is paid for.
Right, thank you, Honourable Member, General Sithole. General Sithole.
Yeah, the CFO is in our midst, and at the time the case started, I think General Skete was also there, they can confirm.
Thank you. CFO?
We'll have to confirm, we'll have to check further, but I can confirm, I don't think we are paying for a legal fees. Yeah, we'll do that, Honorable Member.
Thank you very much, General Sithole.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The last one is the VIP response on the funds, the hike and stuff. I think firstly we have instructed the CFO to do the analysis of the report, and I'm sure he would be able to say what the progress up to this far. But I gave a principal response that says the escalation of expenditure in protection and security, whether it's presidential or it's within the ministry, it's dependent on the number and level of threats. When the threat is confirmed from a report's point of view, and we must escalate the resources, we do so because it's a threat demand. But I've also correctly put it to say, once there's a threat that has been confirmed, we start with the mitigation process as soon as the threat, the deployment or the resourcing of it has started. And as the threats get mitigated, then we also reduce the deployment as well as the resourcing, and that has got a bearing also on the expenditure. But the CFO can briefly relate on how far without disclosing operational information. Thank you.
Thank you, General. CFO?
Sorry, it's in relation with, sorry, I missed that, General.
That's the expenditure report. There's been a hike in the expenditure for protection and security. It's the report that we're supposed to analyze, and we said the office must analyze it.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Chair, Honorable General. So the analysis in terms of the hike in expenditure, it talks to the increase in the crime, in the threats that have been put there. That has been identified. That's why you'll see that there has been an increase in that category. Equally, in relation to matters for DECO, it is one department where they require us to pay. If you look at other departments, we actually recover the cost of events that we happen in the environment. But with DECO, they do have a number of events that involves a lot of head of state, and there's quite a lot of costs that involve it. So it's one item that has actually increased quite a lot in terms of the expenditure item. But if you look over time, the analysis that has been done, I think it's a period of 10 or 20 years, there's been an increase in the number of dignitaries. If you go back from when the dispensation start, you will have the president, former president, as the one come off, they move into former president, so the numbers have also been increasing exponentially over time. So that increase also talk to that as the one move off, they move into another category of VIP, so it has been a constant increase over time. But we are doing a further deep analysis to see that there are no other activities that do not relate, but a large part also is informed by the increase in threats around this year. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Chief. General Sitole? Yeah, maybe, Chair, I'm sure the Divisional Commissioner would also like to add, but I wanted us to just capture it correct to say what the CFO talks to about the events which are funded by DECO, to us is an unfunded mandate, and it wasn't budgeted for. And the one event is a huge expenditure, and which was not catered for. But I think the Divisional Commissioner would like to check.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks. Also, National Commissioner, I think you're quite correct, even the Divisional Commissioner of Finance. Look, I think the biggest driver, it is the money that we're not able to recoup from within DECO, because all the events that are, coordinated from, DECO, will be your major events, because we categorize events that would have. So when we say major event, it means it talks to heads of states, and there would be also ministers. Now, you then have to look at what are the costs that are involved. It means is the hotels, for our members, and then it will be the S&T, because then it means we pay per member, something like 900 and something per member, because we're not paying overtime. And then also, it means, as we say, because if you have head of states, it means you have the in-transit, which falls within the major event itself, and then you have also the hotels, which then you bring another element of static, which also, remember, static we don't have like your standby static only when there is a major event. Therefore, then we take members that are on rest days, which then would be working in that event. So then we pay. Now, usually before, it would be paid by DERCO. Now, we didn't, I mean, it's not budgeted from SAP, so it will be coming from the budget of the division itself.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, maybe, lastly, Chair, there's confirmation we're not paying the legal fees of the PC of KZN. She's paying on her own. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. That is then all the responses in terms of the budget hearing for SAPS in 2018. SAPS Management, Commissioner, if there's anything additional, if we can maybe have it in the next day or two, because the first draft we'll get on Monday, and we will come to the committee on Wednesday next week for adoption. So if any additional information that needs to be provided by the committee, if we can have that by the latest Monday morning for inclusion. So, members, we will try then to bring the first draft to you Tuesday afternoon, and then we will adopt on Wednesday. So that's going to be our game plan. Thank you very much to the police management for the input and the interaction. We take note of all the information, but also all the commitments that's been made by the new National Commissioner, also the new plans, so we will monitor that going forward. Honourable Members, just to remind you, tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, we will meet in V454. 9 o'clock tomorrow, budget hearings, IPET, as well as the Civilian Secretariat. Thank you very much. This meeting is closed.